Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm an asshole. Welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers.
You had to get that out of you, didn't you?
Hold on. Yeah, we got to start over. Hold on.
No, we don't.
Holy play the shit. Intro.
Oh, fuck. Oh, damn it.
Try again. All right, guys. Welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers. Whatever you got, we're with you. My name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts, and Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We're here every week to answer your questions, listen to your feedback, get your audio messages, have a good time, keep you company, try not to make sure you drive off the road. We got you. We're with you. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing good.
All good.
How about you?
Can't complain at all.
Can't complain. Oh, my God. Look at you.
Wow.
Well, you can't complain at all. You've nothing to complain about, Craig?
Nothing to complain. Yeah. The sun is shining. The kids are all being good. That's all I can hope for, you know? That's good.
Have you been doing any work in the shop?
Not much.
Now all of a sudden, we know.
Miss the whole sun is shining part?
Now it makes sense. Outside. Yeah.
Right.
He's fishing with a bottle of wine.
Not quite, but We've basically been to the woods a lot. We're scoping out a place for the cabin and so on. There's been a lot of that going on. And it's all good.
So did question you go check about out the Treehouse Masters? Did you watch the
I
show?
I did. I've watched the very first show of the first season.
Yeah.
These people had like $250,000 for this treehouse. And it was pretty cool, actually. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Will you be building it yourself or will you have...
Well, that's the thing. Uh-oh. So the first step is, we're not sure. So the first step is, because it's on a bit of an incline, the place where we want it. So the first step is to have a deck put down first. It's going to be 4 meters by 4 meters. And then once that's done, then I either build on, I've got a solid base. So I either build from there or I buy a kit, basically a kit cabin. Not quite sure which one to do yet. The price of wood is ridiculous at the moment. Like, just staggering. So the kits actually make sense. They work out even cheaper, you know? And I'm like...
Sure.
For now.
For now, yeah. And I'm like, well, would they be the design that I want? You know, they're not really the design I want because they're all pretty standard-looking things. So I don't know. So the first step is to get this base in, and it's just going to be insulated, the floor and so on. So it's a fair old job just getting the decking in there. It's been full steam ahead with that, really. So I haven't really done much work at all.
Okay. Wow. You're unbelievable.
And I brewed a beer as well.
What a life, man. I swear to God.
I've had a bit of a lazy week, I'll be honest with you. It's been one of those weeks. But
what kind of beer did you brew?
It's a Mosaic IPA. So it's a smash. So it's a single malt, single hops. So it's 38 liters of that. So it's all good. 2 kegs.
Talk about brewing beer. Our friend Gabe Fletcher is one of the sponsors at Blade Show this year, and he's got a very special beer that he's brewed for the Blade Show.
Whoa.
An IPA of some sort. And I'm excited to drink it because every beer I've ever drank from Gabe is fucking delicious.
Nice. There you go. Nice. Is there a drinking thing going on at Blade? Do people drink?
No, nobody drinks. Nobody drinks anything.
Nobody drinks.
Mostly just water.
Okay, yeah, you're taking the piss. Okay.
Yeah, that was literal Mareko. No. No, that's the whole thing. The nighttime, it's like a fucking disaster area in the pit that everyone gets blasted.
Really? All right.
Fucking wrecked.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Anyway, that was my week. Jeez. Oh, man. That was my week. So yeah, nothing much to talk about apart from just gently relaxing, swinging in hammocks, making beer, keeping the kids happy. That's been it.
Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got this knife. I've been kind of taking my precious time between working on this knife that's needed to be rehandled and getting it refinished and everything, as well as cleaning up the shop. Like I said, I had Dennis Tyrell at the shop, and I've been for a class, and so I've been kind of on like this cleaning kick. It feels like spring cleaning, and so I'm just like I'm having actually a hard time peeling away from the cleaning to actually get real work done. But this knife looks good. I'm ready to get it sharp. I think the next steps are get it sharpened, get the handle waxed, and then get it out the door. Although I'm getting ready to go be down inside of Eugene again with Mr. Ben Tendon.
God bless Eugene.
You're listening to the...
What's that, Brian?
Sorry, I pressed the wrong button, actually. I had something lined up, but anyway.
I'm going down to the Eugene Knife Show, which is the Oregon, Oregon Custom Knife Collector Show. I'm excited to see a bunch of people. Mr. Spake is going to be down there. Can't wait to see him. I only see him once a year, basically, now. And other friends like Ben Tendick and many, many other knife makers. I'm looking forward to seeing and taking the kid. Kid's going to be cruising with me. It's going to be fun. The Tendicks have a bunch of kids, and so... and they're all
a name like that, you would.
you're take scum, Craig. You are scum. You are scum. You fucking, I don't know what you did, but all of a sudden I started laughing because I heard it.
I'm gonna wreck this first 6 minutes of it.
Jeez. Yes. Sorry. Oh, yes. You're right.
Killing it. Other than that, yeah. Being in the shop's been good. So I'm excited to go visit friends and eat some good food and get some time out of town.
Nice.
Jeff,
deep in Eugene.
How are you? Deep inside of Eugene.
I'm tired. I've been running around. I actually have something to talk about that's actually would be interesting for us to talk about, but I went down to the Center for Mental Arts and we did a great friction folder class. It was a really great time. And then I got to watch the forging team forge legs for an anvil that they forge a giant anvil. And I got to watch the team in the giant octagon forging really big stuff and spent a lot of time with Pat. And that was really good. And then I came back and then the next morning I went to this chef's conference in Philly. And it was interesting because it was a lot of panelists, people in the restaurant industry, people in the food, in the writers world, the food writing industry. And one of the panels that I went to, which was interesting, which was about food writers and food critics. And they were talking about, you know, the role of critics and stuff like that. And what was interesting was there was one guy who works in the cookbook industry, and he's saying the biggest problem that they're finding now, and one of the things when we're talking about, you know, getting articles written and stuff like that, all these journalists and food critics and food writers were saying that the biggest problem now is that magazines are kind of shying away from, you know, like personal, you know, pieces about people, like profile pieces.
Yeah,
and
really.
Now they're really interested in these quick lists and tiny, you know, really quick things, and it's becoming
people pay to be in the lists. They're making money.
No, yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times they'll do these affiliate programs where you know it's pay to play. But the problem is the writers are trying to pitch doing these profile picks, and then the magazines and they're not interested. That's one thing that was really interesting, and you're going to start to see in these magazines it's going to be more quick. What they said was a lot of readers, especially younger readers, have like this Instagram and TikTok, whatever, and they don't want to read a long article.
Attention span.
Yeah. And then the other thing was interesting was that this cookbook writer was saying that the problem now in the cookbook industry is it's always been hard to sell cookbooks. Like cookbooks are not Tony used to work in cookbooks, my business partner, and he said it's a disaster and it's just they're hard to sell and there's not as many people buying cookbooks as you'd think. But now all these advances are going to TikTok influencers because the publishing houses feel as though, all right, this guy's got 2 million TikTok followers. That's going to translate over to sales. So there's all these terrible cookbooks out. This guy was just like, I've seen terrible TikTok influencer books written. The publishing houses are giving these huge advances. And what happens is they think it's like the comic book movies. You have this baked in audience and you think that people are going to come just to see it. No one's buying these goddamn books, and the books that are interesting, the cookbooks that are interesting, nobody's giving advances to, and they're just rolling a dice that people with a lot of followers are, that hopefully that's going to translate into sales, and it just doesn't. It doesn't. So there's like a real panic in the restaurant industry in regards to food criticism and food writing and different means of media. So that was pretty interesting.
I
think that spans across all things as well. I mean, like the music industry as well, for example. You know, big record companies, they're already signing people who've already got a big audience.
Right.
They don't care about the music. They care about, oh, you've got this amount of people we can grasp. It's a real shame. And yes, I'm sure writers are feeling exactly the same way.
That's the reason why all these movies now, they redo more Star Wars movies and more superhero movies and more movies where you have a built-in audience and people are just like, oh, I'm a fan of Batman. I want to see another Batman movie. And the problem is maybe in the movie business that you get a better conversion. But like in all these other things. But what is interesting is the concept of, well, what's the influencer worth? And in regards to traditional media, is social media worth it or not? And it's just, I found it to be very interesting.
It's something of, well, for the last few years that we've sort of been discussing anyway, haven't we? You know, the importance of social media for what we do. And I think a lot of people maybe cross that line of all of a sudden wanting to be a social media star as opposed to doing what they're doing. You know, they see what they're doing as a way to become a social media star as opposed to being good at what they're doing, not worrying about the social stuff, you know? It's a bit of a weird one.
Traditional media is looking at people with a large following, and then they're also thinking, well, that's helpful. I mean, I do. When I work with other chefs, and we definitely wonder about the conversion rate to their following versus sales. And there is, like, we have sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good. And we definitely notice that in these traditional businesses are trying to weigh out. And I think it's still early in the day for whether or not it's worth it or not. But, you know, what is something that can, you know, like, Logan Paul can sell whatever he wants. I mean, he's got, you know, he's selling whatever the fuck he sells whatever, you know, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, we've worked with chef, very famous. I've worked just recently with a very famous chef. She hasn't sold one thing. Don't buy a mile. You know, so it's just like, how do you kind of figure out what's good and what's not? And there's never really a one for one basis. Everything is long distance.
Yeah, I think quantifying those relationships are tricky. And I think it really comes down to audience engagement. You know, somebody can have all the fucking followers in the world, but if their audience and the people that are following them aren't necessarily engaged, I think you got to look at what kind of conversion rates you're wanting, or kind of, I guess, whatever kind of sales you're trying to hope to garner from through working with that person. And you got to think about it, I guess, probably from more of like a funnel, as a type of a funnel, because, you know, you got this person with all this visibility, but then only a small portion of the people that follow that person are going to convert to the next step or follow the next step towards eventually a sale of something. And by the time you get to the actual sale, you're at a tiny fraction of that person's actual audience who's actually going to be in the position and the desire and go through all those fucking steps to buy the fucking thing.
But the other thing is, it's the expectation of a deadline. Like, we have these, I mean, I think that when we talk about, you know, on Knife Talk, we talk to other people in regards to business and stuff again. A lot of us are thinking too short term. And I think that, you know, time will tell, and you have to kind of, you know, groom these relationships for a long period of time. And you have to make sure you don't have the expectation that these these things that don't work out are meaningless. You have to just understand that there's going to be positives, there's going to be negatives, and you have to keep going. And then hopefully, you know, maybe I had we did once a line with this chef that we really liked, and they didn't go great. However, we did, somebody saw one and then they really liked it, and we did a variation on that, and all of a sudden it was like really good. So it's, the whole thing is very tricky, but it's very tough. And the last thing about the critics that I thought was really interesting, and I think that you could probably say this a lot, is food critics, if you talk to journalists, food journalists, like my friend Julia Sexton, I've had her on Full Blast a few times. She's an awesome writer. And she, when she was a food critic for a magazine or something, she'd go to the restaurant four times under assumed names and just really like study the food and really make a, you know, she wasn't just going in saying, oh, this is, I didn't like this and I read a terrible review. And what these food critics are starting to say is there's so many more people who have no experience. They're not spending any time. They have no, they don't have any understanding of the food or anything like that. And they're referred to as sit crits, citizen critiques. And it's like
Yelp
review. Right. Exactly. Like a Yelp reviewer or these people who are, you know, going into a restaurant and then they rate this obscure number. Oh, I rate this 7.2, you know, and it's just like this. But these are not food people.
And from my depth of experience and deep knowledge and understanding of technique and cooking and presentation.
Right, but it's just like, and what's the problem is it's becoming something so widespread with these concepts of experience and these concepts of expertise, and it's really kind of fucking up traditional media completely.
Yeah.
Totally fucking it up.
An example of that is, so I was in London a few weeks back with Amy for the weekend. We had no kids with us. We're just like, right, we're just going to eat and drink and have a good time for the weekend. So she then has this list of all these like Instagrammers saying, look, this is the best place in London for this. This is the best place in London for that. And I'm like, I mean, these people are just, they're just getting paid by these restaurants to say that, you know? You know, they haven't been to every, I don't know, Turkish restaurant in London, and they now pronounce this to be the best Turkish restaurant in London.
Right.
They've been to this place, probably got paid, probably had free food, and they're going to give them a shout out, you know? And it's difficult to sort of navigate to, you know, find honest reviews of anything these days, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's so annoying. Everybody's self-importance, too, really is something else. It's just like... Yeah. You know, I've had sandwiches from that are like viral sandwiches from places, and it's, people are like losing their goddamn minds. I'm just like, it's fine. I had I had my first Pat's steak at this event. Geez. They had Pat's steak.
What's a Pat's steak?
So in Philly, they're known for their cheese steaks, right?
Yeah.
But they don't call them they call them steaks. You know, so there's two famous, well, there's a lot of famous people. And you talk about people in Philadelphia, they just want to, you know, you got to go to Angelo's. Or you got to go. That's fine. So there's this famous place called Pat's and another place called Gino's. And they're right across the street. And they're like, they're kind of like, they're I guess they're the touristy version of, you know, like famous cheesesteaks.
Well, both of them claim to be the original, right?
Right.
I've been to those guys too.
So they had a tray. I was talking to a friend of mine at this event, and then all of a sudden this tray comes out with like Pat's steaks with they're Pat's steaks. And I'm like kind of not really wanting to have it because I'm just like, I gotta like eat better and I can't be eating cheesesteaks. But I'm like, when am I gonna ever fucking have this again? Because I'm never gonna go down there and stand in line like a crazy person. And I was like, grabbed a half of sandwich and I took a bite of it. And I was just like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I was like,
"That's how
people are crazy." I mean, it had the mouthfeel of like a bacon, egg, and cheese. It was soft and it tasted fine. But I mean, like if I was drunk, I'd be pumped. But it was just like,
yeah.
It's not changing your life.
Oh, I'm not standing in line for that shit.
That's a strap line for them. If I was drunk, I'd be pumped.
I don't think that's
at steaks.
That's funny.
Nice. Should we talk about knives for a bit?
We could if you want. Yeah. Okay. At the end of this thing, I want to talk about AI because I'm pissed off at.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yes.
Oh, well,
yes.
We want to talk about it now then, or should we do a radio tease?
A bit of a tease. Let me do that later.
Because fuck AI and fuck you, artists are using AI art. That's a radio tease beginning.
Exactly. I have no idea. And you know who?
Yeah, I'm good. Radio tease.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, easy. Before you do.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And with that, we have a relevant question from Jordan on Instagram. If you've got a question for us, DM us. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And Jordan's asking about heat treat. He says, fellas, do any of you ever wait a day or so after heat treating to do your tempering cycles? I'm getting a new heat treat oven, and I'm wondering about also using the heat treat oven for the tempering instead of using my household oven. However, I understand that it will take the heat treat oven a long time to cool down to the tempering range, and I understand that leaving the door open to let it cool down faster might decrease the life of the coils. Is there any danger in waiting until the next day to get my blades into the heat treat oven for tempering? Thanks, dudes. Okay, get a new oven. He's been using his household oven for tempering, by the looks of thinking about using his household oven for tempering. So he's got a couple of questions, really. First off, is there any harm in heat treating, then wait until the next day to temper? Let's take that first, then we'll come to a roundabout way of answering that question, I suppose. So wait until the next day. It's one of those things for me where I've heard not to, so I've never done it just because it's one of those. I don't know why, but I've heard you shouldn't, so I haven't. Maybe you guys can answer that for me.
Right now?
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, well, now's a good time.
Yeah, we're podcasting.
I thought you were still going. I mean, I think my understanding, and it's, I think it varies from steel to steel, but in the as hardened state, when the steel, so we take it up to an austenitic range, wherever that is, depending on if it's stainless or carbon, and then we cool it down really quickly to freeze it in that kind of arrangement, and it transforms into martensite. But that martensite, in that form, as hardened form, is under a lot of stress, and that could be bad for the blade, potentially causing blades to break or randomly crack. It happens a lot, especially in shallow hardening steels or water quenching steels, like a 1095 or W1, W2, anything that you might use water or try to get a hormone with. And so they're especially under a lot of stress, and it has a lot to do with like just their chemistry, honestly. I think I remember reading about W2, after it's hardened, you don't want to let the blade really get below like 100 or 200 degrees before actually putting it into the temper cycle, because that the stress of the quench goes up precipitously and potentially causes the blade to break if it's allowed to sit around for too long or at too low of a temp after being hardened. But again, that's not. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule for every steel. I think some of the other simpler carbon steels, you can probably get away with hardening without tempering necessarily right away.
Wouldn't it also be based on how it's ground before it's hardened? Like, I would think that, like, if you, like, for stainless steel, if you're hardening or quenching between plates, full thickness steel, stainless, I would think it would be very, I don't know, physically, I would think it would be difficult to crack, like, even if it's a 3/32 piece of steel or an 1/8 piece of steel. That's just my thought.
Yeah, if it's the same consistent thickness, I think you have a less of a chance of that happening. Is
right.
That what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you had like a very thin, if you were heat treating of something on the very thin side, and there was like a distal taper and it was a thin edge and stuff like that, I think you'd have a lot more opportunities for there to be cracking. Now, the only time I ever cracked, I cracked an integral knife, and the reason why is because I forged it with a big integral bolster. And then I forged in a distal taper, all that stuff. The blade and all the blade and everything cooled at a different rate than the bolster, because the bolster was a kind of a bigger mass.
Yep.
And there was this weird, I don't know what happened. I think this was a number of years ago, and I was hardening it too hot. That was my man, Nick, got into my DMs and told me I was too hot. And it cracked because there was this weird... there was more heat. I think there was more, it was harder connection to, it wasn't quenching at the same rate because there was so much more mass in the bolster. And I feel as though if you were to do like stainless steel, like I don't think I would have a problem with full thickness stainless steel because there's certain people who, when they heat treat full thickness stainless steel, they keep it in the door or in the freezer overnight. And sure. I was under the impression also that the tempering also helps to kick over the austenite that hasn't converted to martensite too.
Right. Yep.
For stainless, I wouldn't worry. Now, here's one thing that Craig got us onto. If you're heat treating with a single oven, and here's what I would do if I was in this guy's situation. I would do all my heat treatment in the morning, and then I would get some fire bricks. Like, that's Craig's move. He got some ceramic fire bricks. Open the door of the kiln, fire bricks in, and then the fire bricks take out the residual heat out of the oven much quicker besides having the door open. I don't think I'd worry so much about the coils.
I think, didn't you, a year or two ago, didn't you speak to Even Heat? And you mentioned that about the coils, that a few people have said that maybe if you have the door open to cool quicker, it could damage the coils. And I'm sure you did, or somebody did. And they said, no, it's not a problem at all.
I'll tell you, I've had my LB13, LB20. I had my Even Heat from them forever. Yeah. For a number, at least I would say 6 years, maybe even 7 years, I've never had a problem with the coils, and I go up to 1950 degrees a lot, and then I also stay at 200 a lot. So like I really wouldn't worry about the coils too much. And with an Even Heat, I'm under the impression they're very easily to replace. Yeah. So don't worry so much about that. But if you know that you're only going to be able to heat treat a certain amount, harden a certain amount of knives and temper a certain amount of knives, you got to plan your day around that. And you want, by the end of the day, you want to make sure that you got at least one temper cycle, yeah, or even 45 minutes.
To add to what you were saying about the difference in thermal mass, I've seen a lot of knives that have been like usually for a Hamon or something like that, have been water quenched. And again, it's usually these shallower hardening steels, like a W1, W2, 1095, something like that, where there will be like a weird crack that'll pop up from the edge and then run parallel to the edge of the steel. And I think what's happening is that when you quench a blade that has been primary ground, to say like 1.5 millimeters at the edge, or like 1/16 of an inch at the edge, but it also is a bit thicker at the spine, you do have a difference of time that is required for the steel. Once you, even though you're plunging the whole thing into oil, and you're quenching it, the edge is going to transform faster than the spine material, and that spine, and right, so that transformation is a little bit slower, and that is additional stress that the steel is experiencing that you want to try by getting into a temper sooner than later to help relieve within the material. It's not a guarantee. I mean, especially with, again, those shallower hardening steels, there's still potential even after the tempering cycle, the shit could still go sideways. That is definitely the thermal mass difference is a real thing to take into consideration, especially with integrals. And the blades, or I guess the steels that you're forging the integrals out of, and how you're cooling them off.
I had a crazy quench this weekend. I was at the Center for Metal Arts.
Woohoo!
Easy, big guy. And I was with Pat Quinn, and Pat Quinn at the Center for Metal Arts is starting to teach not a bladesmithing class, but a blacksmithing class for bladesmiths. And he's doing these, teaching you how to forge knives with a power hammer and really easy ways. He's not a bladesmith at all, but they're amazing. I saw all the progressions. He's got all these different techniques, and it's really super helpful. So if you're a knife maker, especially, you're interested in forging, just the forging process, mm-hmm, he's teaching this class. So he said to me, he's like, hey, you do me a favor, will you heat treat this knife for me? And like, he never makes knives. So he forged out an integral. The bolster and the spine are mild steel, and then he forge welded in a bit of 1084. And he showed it to me, and he forged it beautifully, And then he ground it barely and really thin, thinner than a dime. And I was, he's like, hey, man, do you think you could heat treat this for me? It's 1084. You're going to be heat treating all those friction folders in 1084. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, I can't make guarantees. I'd be happy to. Scared the living shit out of me because it's like mild steel. You know, he's like, well, no, I wouldn't worry because the mild steel is not going to harden. And, you know, I said, I'm just looking. I'm just worried about the, you know, the connection, the forge welded connection between the mild steel and the 1084 bit. I quenched it. It did bend a little, warped a little bit because it was just the, I think it was because of the mild steel. I put it in the shim temper, but I got in the temper oven real quick because I was really kind of concerned that the mild steel was going to be stressed on the hardened bit, and it turned out fine, but it was sketchy as shit.
Yeah.
Jordan, just as the last thing on that question, actually. So you mentioned that you obviously you're using the same oven, you want it to cool down. You could do this in an experiment. So if you open the door and you can see the temperature reading on the screen, let's say you want it to go down to 400 degrees Celsius, for example. When it gets to 400, that doesn't mean you're there, because if you were to close the door, all that energy stored within the kiln is going to come back out. So it'll ramp up again massively. So let it cool down far lower than you think. Close the door and leave that for about half an hour to get your real reading. Because if you just wait till it gets to, for example, 400, then close the door,
it's
gonna good to go. It's going to go skyrocket
degrees.
Back up. Yeah. So just wait for that to sort of equalize, I suppose, you know. And it, as we say, a good way of doing that is putting some fire bricks in. That'll soak away some of that energy. Or, you know, leaving the door open, all those kind of things.
That's the other thing is I've been in that situation and it's going up and I crack the door open during the temper cycle just to kind of like even it out a little bit. And that works.
Yeah. I will say I haven't really talked about how I cool my kiln. I have the same heat treating kiln I've been using for, God, like 12 years now. It's an even heat and it's a set pro or whatever, like the old basic as fuck controller. Same coils and everything. I have always air cooled that thing, and I'll take my air compressor and I'll blow air in there and it'll cool it off. You know, I'll get down to like a 200 in about 20 minutes or so. I only really do that when I'm like in a rush, but I've never had a problem with air cooling it or setting up a fan to blow air in it or something like that. So I can go do other stuff. The point you were making, Craig, even if I get it down to like 100 degrees and I put the knives in, and if I close it all the way, it'll bump right back up to like 450, almost 500 pretty quick. But if I leave it open just an inch or so, that is much less likely to do that.
Well, you know what he should do? Jordan should just get one of them dedicated temper ovens that Evenheat has now. Those things are sick. I have my old Evenheat that I use as a temper oven. It's so helpful. I don't have to worry at all. Mm-hmm. Having two ovens is, I mean, I know it's all, you know, luxury, but at the same time, it's like time is money. You know, time is money. I mean, how many knives? Like today, I wanted to knock out. We heat treated 8 knives. And I thought I could get 2 tempers in, and if I didn't have that second oven, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Before the podcast started, that's for sure.
Just sorry, Joel, I'm just reading through your question again. You mentioned about using your household oven. I'd say you're far better off cooling down your even heat, letting it cool down, then using that for tempering rather than using your household oven, because that temperature will fluctuate like crazy in a household oven. Yeah. You haven't got really that much control. And he's also, I mean, this is becoming the Jordan show here. He's got another part of the question. He's saying, are normalizing cycles needed if you're only doing stock removal? What do we think?
I say yes. Laren Thomas has a great article about how he has optimized the heat treatment of steels by putting them through normalizing cycles, because most of the steels are coming in an annealed state, but you still want to put them through a normalizing process to kind of refine grain and evenly distribute carbon, dissolve carbide, any potential carbides that have formed during that annealing process from the factory, so that you are optimizing the structure within the steel and the organization of the elements within the steel, so that when you do your final hardening, you're good to go. And it doesn't take long to do that.
I mean, No, it doesn't take long. But I mean, I always under the impression that it's come annealed, so it's pretty soft to work with. You're not putting too much stress on it, therefore maybe doesn't require normalizing. You know, if it's you know a good stock that you know exactly what it is and all the rest of it. But right, okay, I hadn't thought of that. Okay.
Yeah, the normalizing is more about like. I think technically the normalizing cycles are for dissolving carbides or any unwanted carbides and kind of more evenly distributing the carbon content throughout the steel. And then normalizing is followed by grain refinement to help dial down that grain size. And then you go to final hardening from there.
Hmm. Okay. Cool. There you go. Jordan's had his money worth there, I think.
Jeez. No more questions from Jordan. Good job, Jordan. Tapped us out for the year.
I think so. Who wants to take the next one?
This is from Opal Knives. I says, fellas, have any of you ever experienced a problem with your quench oil and needed to replace it because it seems to stop working? My oil is only about 2 years old, and I have only quenched probably 30 to 40-ish pieces in that amount of time. The last few knives I have fully ground and finished hand sanding, seem to have cloudy spots, which I thought could be decarb, but have since determined that is probably not decarb because based on thickness of the steel, heat treat, oven soak time, etc., it doesn't seem like decarb could be that deep under the surface. I don't have a hardness tester, but use my Rockwell hardness chisels from Maritime Knife Supply on the cloudy spots, and it does appear somewhat softer. Possibly oil is Parks AAA steel is 3/32 thick 1084 from New Jersey Steel Baron. Any ideas? 3/32, that should be able to quench pretty. I wonder if
he's
quenching full thickness.
That would be weird. Like it shouldn't. That shouldn't.
I mean, 3/32 is pretty thin.
Yeah, it's
just under an eighth, right?
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
How often do you change your oil, if at all?
Never.
I have not changed my oil, but I have read from once again Kevin Cashin that oil. You know, one of the things that when you see these guys in Forge and Fire and they're raising the thing out, you see the fire come out. That really decays the oil. So like. The oil can go bad. I mean, it
deteriorates with time.
It deteriorates over time. Now, I haven't had this problem. I'm going to make a couple of points. I would think. He said he's grinding him down, right?
I think he's talking about after hardening. He does all the grinding and everything, and hand finishing, and he's still seeing these cloudy spots. My guess is he's hardening full thickness.
Yeah, that's part of it, but it's still that's so thin. That's still thin enough that it would surprise me, unless it's not enough, unless the oil's too warm and it's not the right temperature. Mm-hmm. Like I would think that would happen. Like I would check my oven, your recipe, whatever your range is in terms of the oven. And then, I don't know. That's a tough one, man. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, as Jeff said, I mean, check that your heat treat is right first.
I wouldn't use 10. I wouldn't use AAA for 1084. Why use not? Parks 50. It shouldn't make a difference.
Well, it is Parks AAA.
Yeah, especially at that thickness, it shouldn't really make a difference.
It shouldn't make a difference, but I know that I use the Parks AAA for 5200. Yeah, I know that, and I know
it's technically a slower oil, but not by much.
Not by much, but I mean, that's the only thing I noticed in general is I would use and I know that Laren Thomas says that Parks 50 is really the only oil you need, but.
Yeah,
I don't. I can't see why there'd be a problem with the oil.
Yeah,
30 to 40 blades is like nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, if you continue to get that, I mean, check your heat treat. If you continue to get that problem, I mean, you know, it's quite an easy fix. Oil isn't that expensive, is it? Really? All right. Okay. Shall we move on?
Well, actually, I was gonna say.
Go ahead.
The one thing I can think of. Is that if you are not agitating the blade while you're quenching it into oil, it will create what is called a vapor jacket. So if you think about kind of like if you were to plunge a hot piece of steel into water, you would see all the steam coming off of it, right, from that heat transferring into the water. But what it does is it creates a barrier between the quenchant and the material that you're trying to cool down. And so it's called a vapor jacket. So you what you want to do is plunge that knife up and down or side to side or front and back, whatever, but to break up that vapor jacket so it's not developing. Now, I've seen people quench and do tiny little, like, moving up and down just an inch. Like, you really want to plunge that thing up and down pretty vigorously, like 3 or 4 inches at least, to really break up that jacket. Because if you are not properly breaking up that jacket, that means heat is being retained within the steel that is not dissipating quick enough. And with... I think 1084 steel. I think you have a 5 or 6 second window to get below what is called the perlite nose. If you look at the charts in Laren Thomas's book around heat treating and hardening, and basically you want to get below that nose, which is around 900 degrees. Within that 5 to 6 second mark, 5 to 6 seconds is actually quite a lot of time, but if you're doing things right. But if you're not, you're not going to get below that nose, or portions of your blade might not get below that nose within the desired amount of time. So then you're going to start getting a mixture of perlite and martensite or other forms of other crystalline structures within the steel, which are not going to have the same hardness as a martensitic structure, which is where we get kind of, I mean, that's what you're doing intentionally when people are creating these beautiful hamones. They're intentionally insulating portions of the blade to keep them from cooling off as quickly as the exposed portions. And if you're not agitating the blade, some portions are cooling off, but other portions, especially where the vapor jacket, for whatever reason, is sticking on the strongest or encapsulating the steel the most, it is not... is insulating that piece of material from cooling down as quickly as the rest of it. And so I would strongly suggest you do a good job, everybody, even me, do a good job breaking up that vapor jacket if you're quenching an oil, or you're going to get unexpected shit like this.
And just to reiterate, it's you're agitating the knife in the oil to prevent, to keep freshly cooled oil around the knife. Mm-hmm. You're not just sitting there, you know, you're trying to circulate the oil a little bit. So it's, you're keeping it at a very specific temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 42 minutes in, 2 questions down.
Killing it.
Jesus. Jeff, tell me about your grinder.
Oh, Broadbeck Ironworks. You kidding me? Go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, check out what the fuss is about. And when you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and you look at the packages, you look at the attachments, you look at the grinders, it's not just for knife makers. If you're removing material, this is for you. Go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, and you're going to get 10% off everything. Many thanks to our guys at Broadbeck Ironworks.
I believe we've got an audio question.
We do.
Frankie.
We do. Our man, Kitchen Knife Guy Frankie. Kitchen Knife Guy, a.k.a. Frankie, has an audio question. If you want to submit your questions, please. The audio questions have been great. Go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can go into the DMs, and then you record a message just the way our man Frankie has. And let's see how it sounds.
All right. Why not? This is Kitchen Knife Guy, a.k.a. Frankie from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. My question is this. As hosts of the podcast, you're typically knife makers talking to knife makers, but also knife users. What do you wish knife users knew in terms of knife knowledge that would make it easier to communicate with you? Example, and I know you said keep this short, but example, primary bevel versus secondary bevel. As a user, most people think the primary bevel is the edge that they sharpen, when the primary bevel is in fact the bevel that you're kind of grinding in or forging in. So the opposite of what people think. So yeah. That's my question.
You know what I would tell them? To not use a speakerphone when they're recording audio messages. That's number one. That's number one. Frankie, you're my guy. No speaker mess. Guys, Don't use your speakerphone to ask a question, okay? Just ask the question.
Okay. Knife users, knowledge you wish they had. Cutting boards for me.
Oh, that's a good one.
The amount of people I've seen using, and I've talked about this in the past, glass, which are like, they're for ordering pastries. I mean, yeah, I've even got members of my family who still do it. They've got these glass things they put on their counters and they're cutting onto glass. I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? So yeah, I think cutting boards and sort of knife care. A lot of people have got no idea. They'll throw their knife in a drawer and it rattles around with the rest of the cutlery. It's the quickest way to A, hurt yourself, and B, to sort of damage your edges and damage your knives. Cutting boards and knife care for me.
Yeah. What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very nuanced thing, but yeah, understanding like the performance differences of various blade geometries, meaning like a flat versus a convex versus a compound versus an asymmetrical versus all that kind of stuff. Figuring out a way to help convey that understanding to people is kind of tricky without doing kind of an in-depth video about it. But I feel like that would, because all of those grinds have their place. It's just understanding, you know, depending on what you're cutting and what you're using it for, like what kind of grind should the knife have, or how do you typically use a knife? Like all of those things play a role. And I think a lot of people mistakenly think that, you know, I could just that all knives have the same kind of geometry, and that's just not the case. There's so the culinary knife is a highly nuanced tool. That I think, honestly, because it's part of our everyday life, a lot of people take it for granted and don't realize that they're, especially for a handmade, like high-end, one-of-a-kind piece, like they can be highly nuanced with a lot of features. And they might, from a 10 feet away, they might look very similar to another like high or like a production knife. But the way they actually cut and perform can be completely different. But that's, again, that's a lot to try to.
I tell you what, I saw a video this week. Will Stelter at Stelter Manufacturing now. He's put up a video where he's manufacturing these kitchen knives. And he explained the differences in grinds and edges really, really well, actually. Nice. Just a video he put up this week. If you're just getting into knife making, that's a really good video to watch, because it explains about, you know, the food release and the edges and stuff.
Right.
He doesn't go deep into it, you know. It's just a really just good understanding. Really good.
Was he smoking a cigar?
He wasn't. No, he wasn't.
When he's smoking a cigar, it looks like, for a few minutes, you're thinking,
looks like child abuse.
It's like, yeah.
What is this child doing?
Right. It's like, what is this child like, doing?
Child.
It's like those
sit
videos.
On his face, dirty hands. It's like cigar these... hanging out of his face. He looks like he's from a factory in 1912.
It really does. It really does. It is like, it is.
Hey, up me old governor. He's got me working again.
Just put a cigar in his mouth. Get him to work. He'll make him feel like a man. It really does look like child abuse. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what I was trying to get across. It's like, what are they doing to this poor kid? Aren't there labor laws?
Where are your parents, son?
Where are your parents? Oh, God. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, you. Yeah. I'm Will's mum, who's a big fan of the show back in the day.
She's going to kick my
she's
ass.
She's still a big
get
fan.
Down and play the show. Oh, my God. You know,
but it's a good video, by the way. Everybody go and watch it. It's
you know what, I, Frankie, wish knife users would do? It would just talk normal. I think people use buzzwords and expressions, and then they use them with such confidence. If you just talked normally about something, everything would be okay. Don't have to give me all the, you know, I don't care if a knife user says primary bevel and what's the primary. Just talk normal. I think especially when you're talking to relatively most custom knife makers, I think they'd probably appreciate it rather than, you know, saying a word that they think I'm going to light up to. How's the temper? Fine. what kind of tang is that? I mean, come on, man. Just talk normal. Just talk normal. I think that's fine. You're just making dinner, for Christ's sakes, Frankie. I mean, at the end of the day, you're making a sandwich, okay? Let's not get fucking, we're not splitting atoms here.
These stock removal knives, are they hand-forged?
Oh,
yeah, that's a common one.
I only use hand-forged full-tang Damascus. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, you know, that's actually, that's probably the best one. Forged versus stock removal and all the fucking bullshit around it. Forging doesn't make it better.
The best is when you're talking to someone and then they immediately, it's like those movies where the burglar is trying to get to the jewel and then there are all these lasers, you know, and they're trying to crawl over the lasers. But as soon as they hit the lasers, the alarm goes off, right? When these people are talking to me and then it's almost like they hit five lasers. You know, I only use, you know what I'm saying? It's like they say enough, they hit enough lasers that you're just like, ugh, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. You know, I only use, you know, cryogenically treated forged stock removal knives with a, you know, sass grind. It's just like, ugh, all right, we've had enough.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Ding, 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 you've hit the lasers. Get the handcuffs. I hate that shit. To the point where the hardest part is we have a, you know, sometimes Allison, who works for us, she does a lot of the customer service. I always tell her, just don't spend a lot of time with these people and let me see some of the emails. Because I'll say, if they're full of shit, I don't want them wasting your time. Get me on the phone with them and I'll straighten them out in 20 minutes. Because they start to talk big and they start to, but if you see what they're writing and you know you're seeing lasers all over the place, you got to like cut loose because you're wasting your time. Hmm. That's one thing. I don't just talk normal. Don't give me the bullshit.
Well, maybe don't take online experts' opinions to heart, I guess. Because I think there are even plenty of knife makers out there. Not just chefs or home users who don't actually really, really deeply understand like knife making or chef's knives. And so instead of walking around being like talking about all these buzzword points and all that stuff, ask interesting questions. Oh, I think I heard somewhere that this, that, or the other thing is a thing. Is that real? And then give the person opportunity to answer you instead of just walking around saying, I know this because I saw it on YouTube somewhere.
Right. Actually, speaking of YouTube, I went in that video I did years ago with Epicurious. I was showing one of the knives being 52-100, and I was saying it was carbon steel. Well, apparently in one of the commenters, guy goes, see, this is the reason why you can't trust these guys. These guys are totally full of shit because 52-100 is clearly a stainless steel, and this guy is just telling people lies and going all fucking crazy. And it was like, I didn't write anything, but I made a point about it on a podcast, and somebody went in and said, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But it's like, you do have to be careful about the things that people say. You know, it's just like, and on this podcast too, me speaking for myself, I only really speak about what I know about. I try not to speak about what I don't know about, unlike one of our hosts that we're going to talk about in the listener feedback, because we had a problem from last week.
We have a problem. Okay.
We had a problem from last week. Radio tease. One of us might be in trouble. So,
does this come from a Nordic country by any chance?
No. No.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
Why?
Okay.
We get a problem?
But possibly.
With the Nordic? With some Nords?
More problems.
With the Nords.
You get a problem with the Nords?
A problem with the Nords. There's a title. Okay. Let's make a note of that. Okay, who wants to read the next one?
Go ahead. Okay, right. I will. Zach Mapes. Zach Mapes says sandpaper question.
Sorry,
Zach Mapes, sandpaper question. Should the grits on my belts line up with the hand sanding sheets? Recently had a knife finish up to 400 and switched to paper. The paper was way rougher than the belt. Is this some shitty paper or something else? Thanks for all that you do. Zach Mapes.
He's got some of that fake Indasa, I think.
Some of that bunk of Indasa.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's to do with the pressure you're putting on things too. You obviously got a uniform pressure if you're using a belt. If you know, it depends on how hard you're cranking in, I suppose. But then you may be using a slightly different pressure when you're using, doing it by hand. I don't think there's a. Well, there obviously is a standard that these manufacturers are using to degrade it to a certain grit. But I don't know. Yeah, I've certainly had, tried different papers and they've been slightly different, that kind of thing. But generally, they're all in the same sort of ballpark. There's not much to it. So I'd say maybe it's just maybe technique or if you're going against the grain. So let's say, obviously, with the platen, if you're doing the belt, everything's running down the platen, which is going to go from spine to edge. But let's say if you're doing it by hand in the other direction, they'll be really, really visible. So you may think, hey, I need to restart and do all this again. It's not. You're just changing the pattern of the way you're doing things. So maybe that's something. I don't know. What do you guys think?
What do you think?
I think all sandpaper is not created equally.
For
and
sure.
I think that even like belts, I think the difference between like a Zirconia 220 and a J-Flex 220 is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't think you can. I think it's the way we do it is I'll grind down with 36 and then I'll go hop down and then we'll use the disc sander and I'll do the disc sander up to 800 and then that gives me a very easy platform to start doing the hand sanding at maybe 320, 220, 320.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because I mean you get a less
down.
Well, I mean you have a the I've been told by Jeremy Spake that when they start hand sanding at a deeper grit or a coarser grit, you're going to have deeper scratches in the beginning.
Yeah.
So if you can get to the point where you're hand sanding at a higher grit, you're going to have not as pronounced scratches.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I definitely notice this phenomenon. Like, I'll do all my finish grinding. I'll take it up to 400 grit on the machine, and then I'll start hand sanding, and it. Even if I start at 400, it looks rough as fuck. But if you think, at least for me, especially because I'm doing the compound grinds and convex grinds and stuff like that, I'm usually using a J-Flex belt or something like that, which is an alumina oxide abrasive, which breaks down very easily compared to other like zirconium God damn it! What was the other? Oh, ceramic or anything else like that. And also, the sandpaper that we're using usually is alumina oxide as well. And so, but because that grit breaks down when you're on the machine, even within a few rotations, that grit has broken down and it leaves what is perceived to be a much higher finish than maybe the first couple seconds of when it was cutting. So
good
I,
point, yeah.
Yeah, so I could see coming off the machine, and this happens like every time. I come off the machine, the machine finish looks great, but then I jump onto the 400 grit sandpaper, and it's like beating the shit out of the blade. It's because I'm going into the blade now with fresh 400 grit Indasa sandpaper versus the broken down grit that I just came off of the machine with. So the machine probably is leaving what looks like probably like a 600, 800 grit satin finish. But then I'm starting to hand sand at 400 grit. It's going to look super fucking rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think we cracked it. By the way, you can help yourself by using Dasa Rhino-Wet, as Moreco does, as Jeff does, as I do too. You can get that from texasfarriersupply.com. where they've got everything you could possibly need. Whether you're a knife maker, bladesmith, ironwork, whatever you want to call yourself, they've got it all there. TexasFarrowSupply.com. Fill up that basket with Indasa Rhino-Wet and use Knife Talk 10 to get 10% off the entire order. And that's at TexasFarrowSupply.com.
We got to get to some listener feedback.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Well, we got a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do in this podcast.
We certainly have. Okay, let's do it.
All right, guys, listen, if you want, get your sounders on because now we're also the goddamn information booth in the knife making community, okay. Metalworking community. So if you want to send in your listener feedback, feel free, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we're now going to do a round robin of listener announcements. Jesus Christ.
Tune it in, turn it up, and rip off the knobs.
Okay, first is T. Frank Custom Knives on May 17th. He's having having a great hammer-in on May 17th with Lynn Ray, Jay Cook, Tim Foster, Ed Brazil in Fort Smith, Texas, Arkansas. So email thomasfranklinknives@gmail.com if you're interested. Fort Smith, Arkansas. Next, our Ferromorphix is having the Bladesmiths of Blackstone Valley, Ryan Brewer, Matt Bovart, Josh Prince, Zoe Porter, Zoe Porter, John Maynard, and more going to
Don't touch that dial. You're listening to the best.
Worcester Center for Crafts, April 3rd through May 1st. All right, give me another one.
Turn it up loud.
STP Custom Knife Collection. Once again, the Louisiana Custom Knife Show is September 13th and 14th in Gonzales, Louisiana. Tables and booths available at lacustomknives.net. They did a nice job for us, and they made us one of the sponsors of the thing. They gave us an award, too. So my man, STP Custom Knife Collection, once again, Louisiana Custom Knife Show, September 13th through 14th. All right, give me one more.
Tune it in, turn it up, and rip off the knobs.
All right, Canadians, Can Iron is August 7th through 10th in Austin, Manitoba. Demonstrators include Pat Quinn, Jake James, Leah Arapach, Noah Vachon, and more. And it's sponsored by our man, one of the sponsors is our man, Lawrence Lake, at Maritime Knife Supply. Go to caniron.ca for tickets and more. Sounds like a good time. And if Maritime Knife Supply is involved, that's good enough for me. So go get yourself some of that Can Iron. Okay, listener feedback. Number one, this is a nice one for Craig. Feedback, I think Craig's joke about Carly from Damasteel's cell phone didn't get enough laughs. 52-100 was super genius, LOL. Love the episode so far. You made it a lot more enjoyable to go to work in the morning. One of the things that we do as the three of us do is we do step on each other's...
Glad you changed that.
Yeah, I really had a haul ass. The brain really started turning around.
We did it once, okay? People keep going on and on about it.
Yeah, U-turn. My little brain was just like, U-turn, U-turn, U-turn. We do step on each other's jokes, but that's okay. I don't remember what you said about Carly's phone, Craig, but now I want to listen back and find out.
I think I said it was like a Nokia 52-100.
Yeah. 52-100. Yeah. Oh, you said 52-100.
It was a steel joke.
Yeah, that was the point. He liked the steel joke. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So one of us made a very, very... I talked about how, you know, we talk about what we know and maybe not what we don't know. One of us made a incredibly dangerous suggestion. Anybody want to guess who it is?
Me.
From last episode. Who?
Me.
What do you think, Craig?
Probably me.
I'm going to answer it by Ronald Handmade. And I heard of this a few times. I don't know if you noticed. Quick note on using purge gases and kilns. Purge gases and kilns.
Morecco, this is all you.
Well, okay, get comfortable, Craig. Morecco is right. Nitrogen will work as well as argon. It's literally a non-reactive gas displacing available oxygen. A low-flow regulator feeding into a steel pipe through a wall of the kiln at a couple of liters per minute will be enough to flow even if the door is open and closing. It'll use as much as little as less than a welding torch. As for Craig's idea of using a gas-tight sealed tube in a kiln, you had this idea, if you remember, to create create a gas-sealed tube to put the knives in and charge it full of gas and then put it in the kiln. that was your idea. As far as kiln's Craig's idea of using a gas-tight sealed tube, all I can say is, let me know if he's heat treating so I can stay out of range. That pipe bomb in the making right there. So I got a couple messages like, is Craig trying to like kill everybody? Because you had this idea of like,
do you know what? I left the show last week thinking that was a fucking genius idea.
Yeah. I got a few people being like, how's he going to get open the can, number one? And then number two is, it's going to be a fucking bomb because you're going to like... You'd charge this sealed tube filled with gas. You stick it in the kiln.
Well, I wasn't going to charge it. The whole point was there will be a little bit of oxygen in there. So you put a little bit of paper in there, you know, like you do in a package, you know, and it'll burn off any oxygen in there. So it'll be a complete sort of vacuum inside, which I suppose, yeah, probably is dangerous. Yeah.
You got your balls broken for that, rightfully so. And you took it well. You took it well.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a combination of our ideas. So instead of a closed tube, you have like a trough that you place the knives in. And then whether you open the door or not, the flood of the gas is going into the trough. And because it's capped on the ends as well, and with the top open, you can slide it out, grab a knife out, and then quench it without necessarily losing all the gas that was inside of that trough.
We're back to like lasers getting to the jewel. This is like a lot of contortions to quench some knives. A lot of contortions. Our friend Justin Stinson said, regarding normalizing stock removal knives from the last episode, I always do with W2 and 10 series. I always wait to drill my holes until after normalizing because the holes drill easier. I get steel from New Jersey Steel Baron, so there is some effect. Whether it affects the final heat treatment or not, I don't know. Also, Laren Thomas said that one of your episodes that you don't need the middle normalizing cycle, just above and below critical. I've implicated this for years now with no problems. 1550, then 1400 Fahrenheit saves time. Just to make sure they're straight between. So that's that. Mm. And then Fran O'Toole. That's a name right there. Fran O'Toole. Fran O'Toole says, hey, guys, hope all is well. I think Jeff's getting milk of magnesia mixed up with something else. Maybe like milk of poppy, because you definitely ain't sleeping after you take milk of magnesia. I was talking a couple episodes ago. I had a colonoscopy, and they gave me propofol, which is also it's a white liquid that they inject, and then it knocks you right out. And the nickname for it is milk of amnesia. So it wasn't milk of amnesia. Why don't we go? We can go back to regular questions. I know we have a couple more audios. So it's really up to you.
Well, before we do, you've already mentioned Can Iron being sponsored by Maritime Knife Supply. Of course they are. Lawrence is a great dude, isn't he? But yeah, they've got everything you need. They're the one-stop shop for knife makers. Steel belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Also have the deal on belts. If you buy 10, you get 10% off and all that kind of thing. So head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com and also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Okay, should we do some more questions?
Yes.
Jesse Lang has Instagrammed us. Hey guys, I've listened to every episode, but the frequency and quality of my submissions definitely doesn't qualify me for a gold star listener status. Okay. My question for you is, if you could change anything about your shop, what would it be? Or if you were building your dream shop, what are some things that that might not be obvious, like having an extraction fan in the hot shop, outlet placement, etc. Thank you for everything you do. So, okay, dream shops from day one. Jeff,
I would like a room separate from the grinding room.
Yeah.
I would like a room separate from the grinding and the, I would like a room where I could have cleaner things with dusts and collecting places. That's what I would like. A little bit. I would like one more shop next to the shop so I could have like a cleaner area. And then I would, that would be something special. And it would be nice. I thought immediately it would be nice to have natural light, but I think I do better in a dark shop with very specific lighting, like very angled lights. Yeah. If I was in a painting shop, I mean, I have a dream painting studio. I see it in my mind, a painting studio different than a regular shop. But I like my shop. I wouldn't make any changes. I'd have just a little bit more room. Dream painting shop, though.
Yeah.
So good.
What are you thinking, Morocco?
Yeah, I think...
Day one. Unlimited funds.
Unlimited funds. I think I would want my shop to double as a man cave, like Craig's got going on. So I like the idea of a barn where, like, the center of the barn is kind of the hot shop area. And then off to one side would be enclosed grinding, drilling, dust making stuff with proper air circulation off to the side. And then on the other side would be also enclosed, but that would be more of the cleaner stuff, whatever that might be. And then having a loft of some sort that can look down on the shop. So if I have, like, maybe it could double as a guest house or whatever, but a place to, like, go hang out and lounge and whatever and have people over. Because long term, I would really love to have a place where I can invite people to come teach, to come kind of take classes and or do hammer-ins or something like that. But that is definitely down the road for me. That would kind of be my dream shop, is kind of like an old style barn that's got, like, usually it's like the animal stables on either side with like the big open area down the middle. And so I like the idea of, yeah, dirty side, clean side, hot stuff in the middle, and then a loft. I think that'd be cool.
Nice. I think for me, it'd be light. So I'm in this barn here. And it's pretty much as Mareko just said. So there's a loft, and up here in the loft, I've got the studio, and I've got like a rehearsal space. But then downstairs is the sort of workshop. What was going to be a grinding room quickly turned into a brewery. So yeah, it would be nice to have a. I don't know. You see, like, you know, maybe you're on YouTube or whatever, and you're looking at people doing stuff, and everything just looks so clean and in place. And I suppose if you're a YouTuber, it has to be, because you know it needs to look good. But I'd love that, just to have clean and natural light coming in would be a massive bonus. But I can't complain. You know, it's all good.
Okay. You want an audio question? Yeah.
Let's do an audio question, yes.
This
please.
Audio yeah. question comes from our man, Dale Watterson. Dale Watterson, take it away.
Hi, KTP Cuties. Thanks for everything that you guys do for the knife-making community as a whole. Now, I've got a question for Craig. Well, Craig, as you guys call him. So, you've been working together for 7 years or so now, and as far as I know, you guys haven't met up. So, Craig, how is it we're going to be able to get you and all three of you in the same room together? We're going to get the 355, so tour US. Maybe you can headline at Blade Show. That'd be pretty awesome. Anyhow, thanks for all the advice. Thanks for all the dilemmas. And most of all, thanks for all the dick jokes. From Dale, still bricked up.
That's how you record, ladies and germs. Clear, crisp, and to the point. I have an answer. I mean, I know.
He said
answer.
Craig's voice twice, or name twice, and I swear to God, he said the same fucking thing both times.
No, he said Craig, then he said Craig. And I hear Craig more than I hear Craig.
I cannot believe they're both of those are different. cannot believe both of those are
Craig
different.
And Craig.
Craig. Craig. So there's more of like a Y sound in it, right? Egg.
Yeah, is that what you prefer? Yeah.
Craig.
Well, it's that's the way it is. It's C-R-A-I-G. It's Craig.
Craig.
Yeah. But I over here in France, I get Craig or Greg a lot.
Greg's pretty.
Which,
rough.
I mean, it could be worse. It could be worse. So my wife gets posted the name Arnie because the way she spells her name Amy is A M I E, Quite often people just write Arnie.
Because the R and the N are so close to each other, it looks like
exactly,
an M.
Exactly, yeah, since he gets mail for Arnie Lockwood. It always makes me laugh. Arnie. Yeah. Go on, Jeff, you've got a solution, you say.
Yep. Get some money. I mean, how? I don't know what, this is easy shit. Everyone's just like, how are we going to get him over? How are we going to get him over? Well, it's not going to be out of love. I mean, love, it's not going to be out of like brotherhood. It's not going to be like, he's going to start saving all his, you know, he's not going to take all the funds for the treehouse and put it into flying the Blade show. You gotta pay him. Get your money out. Pay the man.
We've had this question so
Dude,
much.
Dude, people are hot to get you over here. It's easy.
Couple of months.
It's easy. There's a price. You got to figure out what it is with this fucking guy.
Who would you open for who plays around the U.S. all the time, other than Taylor Swift?
Oh, can you
imagine? Oh, geez, is the band.
Yeah.
Well, getting them over as well, that's another big thing. You know, that would be impossible. Impossible. But no, it'll happen one day. But do you know what? I do like the fact, right, that every Thursday evening, at the same time, the three of us dial in, we have a chat. I leave the show feeling far better than when I'll be honest with you. I never want to do the show. Like, hour before the show, I'm like, oh, fuck, I need to go to the show. Every time I have fun and I leave feeling much happier, and I think I'm happy with that. Let's just keep it as it is. It's good.
I got to tell you, I'm not, this is not anything other than being honest. If you walked in the Blade show, you'd be mobbed.
Like the Fonz.
You'd be... Cunningham! Zip it! Zip it! Sit on it! Sit on it, Cunningham!
Leather jacket, white t-shirt. Yeah.
I would love it if you did that. Are you Craig Lockwood? Hey! Sit on it!
Greg written on the back of my shirt.
Look, someday it'll happen. The problem is it's a long way to go. That's the problem.
It's a long way to go, and it's basically a week out of doing anything, you know. And to be honest, up until now, it would have been impossible anyway because the kids and so on. But you know, they're in school and stuff now. But there's
and also, you kind of bag out on things. You were supposed to come down to Barcelona a couple times.
I was, yeah. And twice. Actually.
Well, I'm going to be down there this time. You should stop on by.
Yeah, I'm busy. When you come in?
End of June.
Yeah, busy June, July. Yeah.
Hey,
we gotta go to Craig.
Sit on this and rotate. Oh yeah.
If we will, I'm sure we will cross paths at some point. But I do like the fact that we haven't
ever.
Crazy. Nothing against you, but no. I do quite like the fact that I've got this little, almost like a little secret life there going on. You know, I quite
yeah.
It's like you got a second marriage, and secret family.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah,
oh,
yeah,
wow,
yeah,
wow,
yeah. It does feel like that sometimes.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of which, I think we should end the show before we get to the after show. I think we should talk about AI because it's driving me crazy.
Okay, well, before we do, let's talk the complete opposite. Let's talk about a company that I've been going for a long, long time. Jeff knows all about their history. Tell us about
Tormek. Celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black TH sharpening system. Go to Tormek.com, or you can follow them on Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. Great company. I actually just had Carl Frenz on. He's one of the marketing guys for Tormek. He's turned into a great friend. And we talked all about it on this past week's episode of Full Blast. It's a great company, and if you're trying to sharpen things, chisels, gouges, axes, and you're looking for something that's repeatable, you can use the jigs they have, and the jigs are very user-friendly, or you don't have to use the jigs. You know, there are other ways to do it. It's really great. It's made me a better knife maker by far. It's made me kind of not take off too much material. It's just right. Everything comes out great. My knives are sharper. I'm better for it. So go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram, Tormek.com. See what the fuss is about. Tormek.
See what the fuss is about. Nice. And do you know what? Since 1995, Dharma Steel have provided their customers with the finest stainless Damascus pattern steel in the world. They've been working with us for some time now. We love Dharma Steel. We love the people. We love their product. We do the DCI with them every year. And we've got a build along coming as well. So if you don't know about the build along, head on over to the dharmasteel.se website. You can get your steel from maritime knife supply as well. And this year it's slightly different. So you're actually getting two billets of steel. And the idea is you're going to make a culinary knife with an addition of some sort. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what people are making. But if you've never used Dharma steel before, this is the perfect opportunity. It's easy to use, easy to heat treat. And my God, it looks beautiful. So head on over to dharmasteel.se. Check, they've got a special tab there for DCI and the Dharma steel build along right there on the website at dharmasteel.se. So get involved. Okay. AI, where are we with this?
I have a real problem, a dilemma. Not a dilemma, but, you know, I've been, for the 7 years I've been on this podcast, I've been talking about what's art and what's not art. Mm. And I, honestly, it doesn't really matter. It's an easy controversy, not a big deal. Frankly, it's more about, like, is it successful as art or not? That, to me, is a kind of a better, but for the listener, it's too much. These AI filters where you submit a picture and then they use that picture and put it through using other people's talents, skills, their signature drawing or whatever, I hate it. And I don't hate it as much as I hate the fact that these people who want to be artists don't realize that they're taking away the countless hours of work to get to where they are. And then they're stealing these ideas from people, and I find it to be disgusting. Disgusts me.
Yeah, I've got a similar feeling, and I woke up this morning actually, and this is sort of built up inside of me. So I opened up my phone, and I opened up Instagram, and I follow lots of bands and that kind of thing, you know, and bands that we've worked with, and bands in the industry, all that kind of thing, and they're all doing the same thing over the last few days. These fucking dolls, they're like, as if it's like an action figure. So like the band is saying, you know, imagine, you know, this is our new action figures. These are the band dolls you can now get. This is, you know, it's a bit of a joke. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ. And they're all doing it. So, it's, you know, the first time you see it, you think, oh, that's pretty cool. But now everybody's doing it. It just shows that you've got no creativity. You're lacking there in some way. And I just think, I don't know. I think creativity should be enjoyed. It should be something that you enjoy doing, creativity. And I think if you're handing that over to something else, and you know, people aren't claiming that they're doing it. They're, you know, people are clearly saying, you know, look what AI has generated and so on. But I just think, come on, what are you doing?
But the algorithms are taking information from people who have done this and they're using it. That's the issue.
Yeah. Well, the algorithms will be taking things from you. It'll be heading over to your website, and it'll be looking at all your kind of
your
stuff.
Your style.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you've got no, you know, you can't opt out of that kind of thing. You know, at the moment, it's like the Wild Wild West out there. People are just taking what they want. I don't know where it's going. You know, it needs to be policed in some sort of way, but I don't know how.
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, part of me wants to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Go ahead.
But couldn't a human do the exact same thing? Just not as, I guess, efficiently or in regards to time or the amount of volume that they could turn out. But people could do the exact same thing. And they do, right? They copy other people's knife styles, other people's art styles, other people's musical styles.
Yeah, but does that make it good?
No, but I feel like... Okay, so, but I feel like you have all this,
and people are called out for it too. So if they do, are called out for it immediately. But if people are using AI, they're like, "Oh, it wasn't me."
Well, here's the thing,
kind of thing.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine. We were talking about it, and I was saying, "Look, you if you're a child and you give a child a pen and they draw a cat, does that make them an artist?" Not really. Usually an artist is somebody who's been doing something and you have an idea and then you're building upon that idea and you're building a body of work and experience. And then it's informing you on your work. And then when you talk to an artist, you're looking at their body of work. Now, when the perfect example is that Studio Ghibli, that company that made all those great movies and the Japanese anime, and then some dipshit came up with this idea to basically Studio Ghibli-ify your pictures. Now, what you've done is all that hard work and energy has been thrown away an experience, and now you're stealing someone's style and their whole thing, and it's like it's gross, and it's stealing, and the company, the owner of the Studio Ghibli hated AI in general anyway, and then they're coming up with this way to make everything look like, and it's stealing his whole identity. Now, yes, you're right, Mareko. Just because it's a computer, a person could just steal your shit too. But they're assholes for doing that. It's just a question of, I honestly believe within, and we're now finding that a lot of writers are using AI to write their, you know, articles and stuff.
It's built into your phone now when you write an email. Well, it'll suggest things.
It's because, as people, I feel also art is, I'm having, the older I get, the more I think about it. I think that being creative doesn't make you an artist. It's executing that creativity that you have. So you are creative and you're having someone else execute it like a computer. It's just fucking lame. You're not putting any craftsmanship or work into it.
And that's like saying that you can only paint with your fucking fingers instead of brushes. If you use brushes, then you're a bitch.
No, that's not because
technology continues to advance and change,
bro.
Talking about the tools instead of the person.
This is incorrect. No, this is incorrect because that is incorrect because a paintbrush leaves a specific line, and you're calculating that line in your painting too. If you were a professional finger painter, that'd be different. But if you're a professional painter and they're using these the paintbrushes, you're learning how to use the paintbrush.
Right, but you're demonizing the tools.
I'm demonizing these computer filters. I'm demonizing these filters that you plug it in and then it just turns it into something. You're stealing from artists
for time immemorial, and is actually never going to fucking change.
They're garbage too.
I'm saying what you want. What you want to change is never going to change. So what can you change and adjust about it?
You can tell people who identify as artists to fucking use their heads and don't use these things, because what's going to happen is, this is what's going to happen. People are going to stop paying artists for their skill and their time and their energy. They're going to say, why would I pay you to do this graphic design? I should just have a computer just copy your shit for free.
That happens now.
And
that
it's bullshit.
People using things like Canva,
and if you're an artist, and that's okay with you, then you should have you should really think about it, because it's a very short-sighted idea. And I just feel as though people are just, using these filters to do these funny things on Facebook, and look at me, now I look like a fucking cartoon, action figure, but they don't realize that this is the beginning of normalizing the use of AI to steal intellectual property and style and design.
Mareko is right that this has been happening forever.
Right, and it's wrong.
When the first printing press was invented, that took away jobs from people. And when every step along the way, we're taking away sort of jobs and things. But my problem with it is accountability. Like we said, anybody could go and look at other people's work and copy their styles. A person can go and do that now, but they're accountable for that. They've done that. The issue is now, when that style is copied, who is accountable for it? There's nobody accountable for it. That's my issue.
I don't think, I'm not one to say this should be illegal. I'm not the one to stop you. I'm more of an opinion of people who are creative artist types should use their heads more and understand that the writing is on the wall, that nowadays with efficiencies and there's, there are less jobs are being replaced by AI and deep learning software. In the future is going to be wrapped around people being able to put some humanity into something. So when you start to...
Yeah, do you think there's more value in that
I'm very optimistic that people being able to make stuff with some humanity is where we're going to have a little bit more value, because otherwise, we're done. And I just think that these artist types who think it's funny or it's cute, I think that they're starting to kind of normalize the theft of people's style. And I'm against it. And in regards to all the people who've done it before, regardless if they use a computer or not, fuck them too.
I think it's a progression in technology that is like a steam train. It's going like crazy. But I mean, it worries our generation. I think generations below us it doesn't worry. It's just something that
they have no idea.
No, it's grown up. But I do think, I mean, me and my wife were talking about this week, particularly we mentioned, you know, adolescence on TV. We watched it. So we're talking about our children being able to use phones and social media, for example. Because as kids, we didn't have that, you know? And this massive ramp up in technology has now made this so widespread that virtually everybody's using social media of some sort. So, like, well, when, you know, if we don't allow the kids to, you know, use these things in the future, they will become sort of outcasts because, you know, you need to communicate, to do anything these days. But obviously, we're trying to hold that off as much as possible. But then I was thinking, well, do you think it'll be more sort of punk rock for kids in, I don't know, 10, 15 years' time to just sort of switch off from everything like that? Because that's what my parents do. That's what the older ones do. Do you think it'll be a point where it'll be cooler to sort of be offline and not to be, you know, using AI and all these things? Because that's just, it's just, we've been saturated by it, you know?
I do think there's an aspect to that. It's like almost like a, not necessarily like a full-on countercultural kind of movement, but or trend, but just like to buck the trend, because I think more and more our studies and science showing how terrible our exposure to social media, or even the fucking light coming out of our phones, are for our overall health. Is going to become so well known that it's only going to make perfect sense to not have our faces in front of a screen all the time. Just like it's not a great idea to make McDonald's the only source of your at least in McDonald's in the United States, making it your only source of food, because you're going to fucking probably die pretty quickly after just eating that day and day out.
That's a good example. I think kids now are aware of that. But I mean, when we were kids and it was relatively new, we wanted to hoover that shit up as much as we could.
Of course.
But I think kids now are more aware of those dangers. And I think that's what's happening with technology. Well, I hope that's what will happen with technology as well. I mean, even if you look at just Facebook, for example, which is, you know, a dumber version of AI. So think of it that way. The kids aren't on Facebook anymore because that's what their parents are on. That's what, you know? So I'm hoping, I've got my fingers crossed, that by the time my kids are sort of 15, 16 and going into their, you know, through their teens, that it, like I said, it's going to be more punk rock to not get involved in stuff like that. It's like that's for the squares, man.
Back to the AI filters, I want to make I'm just trying to make it a little bit easier to understand. Now, Miracle, let's just say, you know, we talk about with Aaron Goff and guys who do use CNC for their knives, and we say, well, it's not just pushing a button and a knife comes up. You know, it's a lot of work and figuring out fixtures and computer work. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a point where you're going to be able to press a button and a knife going to come out at some point down the line.
Sure. Oh, yes. Now, I'm sure there is now.
So if there was a, you know, you get to CNC to the point where you press a button, knife comes out, you have all these options. And all of a sudden some, you know, clever guy decided that he wanted to have a Mareko Mamasi style Japanese cowboy handle button that would take the style. No, I'm not kidding. And then add that on to their design. I want this. I want a harpoon clip. I want this. I want that. I want a Japanese cowboy. And then, boom, everyone's pressing buttons, and then they're making knives with the and it says the Japanese cowboy style. And you're like, y'all know where it's coming from. Y'all know that it's coming from you. You'd be pretty bummed out, right?
I don't think so.
You for free. People were taking your shit on a button, and then for free, they would just take your style.
I could get really pissed off about that, but the reality is you cannot get one of my actual pieces made by me except for from me. And I think that is the opportunity that artists are missing out on.
But what if it's indistinguishable
from yours? It's exactly the same.
So,
and it's like, you'd be pissed.
So that's where maybe potentially the blockchain comes in, and we can talk about how we can incorporate technology in that way to really tracking ownership from the original creator to the present owner. But I think if this person's not buying it, like, sure, they could walk around with this knife and be like, I have a Mareko Mamasi all day fucking long. But the reality is they fucking don't. But that doesn't bother me, because I'm still going to have, I've done the work to build an audience of people who are interested in getting work from me. There could be a company out there printing out Marco Malmasi knives without me fucking knowing it and selling them for $100 a pop for all I fucking care. I really don't give a shit because
You don't give a shit.
No, I don't.
And it said your name on it.
I don't think so.
Oh, come on. It said your name on it?
I mean, that's different.
That's what they're doing. That's what these AI things are doing. They're putting their name on Studio Ghibli.
But if you look at artists, they do these fucking amazing paintings, and then they sell these prints, and the fucking prints themselves sometimes sell for a few $100.
But the prints are from the owner.
Right, but shouldn't the real original piece have the real true value versus, like, I don't know.
That's a different story. That's the ownership of the design of the artist. They have control over what they're putting out, what's being out there in with their name on it.
I think it comes down to trying to distinguish yourself to a point so that it doesn't fucking matter, because people who really want your shit are coming to you and paying you for your work, and you can't control. Ultimately, I can't control somebody trying to rip off my work and sell it as my work somewhere.
Yes, you can.
How the fuck am I going to do that for somebody who's halfway around the world from me?
I'll tell you.
Do I just put them on blast and fucking blackball their ass?
Just listen for a second. The whole point of this AI thing is you're telling other knife makers. You're telling people that this is not acceptable, and then you're not making it fun and making it okay. You're saying this is some bullshit. I spent all this time. I'm a Reco Momasi. Spent all this time doing this, and you stealing my stuff is not right. That's what you're saying.
It sounds a lot like the people that you were making fun of, though, for boohooing about fucking Instagram blocking their shit. It's a hard time to tell the difference.
Well, it's some bull. Look, there's going to be fucking roadkill. There's going to be people on the side of the road. There's nothing you could do about it. But when we have creative people thinking that it's okay to steal other people's content, you're making a mistake. That's all. I mean, am I going to stop it? Of course not. But you're going to be able to tell people whether it's right or wrong. And then also people who identify as artists, not seeing any problem with it, they got a problem too. I would protect myself. And I don't know how, except for to tell people, don't use fucking AI for, like, your art. Don't put your fucking Simpsons filter in to make you look like Bart Simpson. It's fucking bullshit. Be creative. I've recently been doing much more, out of anger, I've been painting more, just because I'm just like, fuck it. I'm painting more. I'm going to be doing more handmade
stuff. I'm just trying to understand. So if I'm a talented illustrator, and I do my own hand-drawn kind of silly interpretation of myself, self-portrait in the style of Studio Ghibli or The Simpsons or Matt Groening or whatever the fuck, that's better or it's not? Because I hand drew it versus it being pumped through a filter.
I don't think it's better or not better. I'm thinking that's in a different situation. You should talk to tattoo artists. They hate it when people come in and they want you to bring in art from other tattooists. They're like, that's not my shit. I have a problem with it. You're doing a giant scale of people stealing content. They're stealing hard work from artists. And if that's okay with you, then that's okay with you. It's not okay with me, and I'm going to say it's not okay with me. So in regards to whether it's a print or original, that's a different story. Don't use fucking AI. I'll tell you what I use AI for. If I'm watching a Knicks game, I want to know what Karl Anthony Towns, I want his box scores. That's it. I have to send a text while I'm driving. But other than that, I'm not putting my shit through filters to make my stuff look like somebody else's stuff. And if that makes me wrong, then good. I'll stay wrong.
It's a difficult one. And I think AI itself, the label AI, can mean like so many different things, let's face it, you know? Like I said, you know, it's even built into the latest OS on our phones and iPads, whatever we're using. Type an email, it'll suggest, you know, would you like us to complete this email for you and all that kind of thing. Even now, looking at my emails, it's like filtering things into different boxes using its own intelligence, and it's generally right each time. So, you know, it can be helpful in that way, but in that way, that AI isn't taking... excuse me, isn't taking, you know, whether you use the word art or whatever, isn't taking other people's work. It's not learning in that way. It's only learning from my own actions. So that's different. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm quite happy with that. But when you mention, you know, people putting stuff through filters to make it look like something else, I wouldn't necessarily say that was AI. That's just an algorithm that's just made, and it's pretty set in its way. But I don't know. It is difficult. I said, for me, it's accountability. You can't go to somebody and say, hey, you've taken my work or anything like that, because there is nobody to go to. There's no accountability.
No, of course not.
Whereas if somebody else is in another workshop the other side of the world taking on your designs, and you can it's accountable.
People should know better.
Responsible for
people
that.
Should know
exactly.
better, and they should know better, and that's all I'm saying. And if you go ahead, live your life. I don't give. Do your own thing. I have worked for a long time as a sculptor, and I don't want my shit taken and just all the hard work I've spent taken just for some dipshit who doesn't really want to execute creativity on their own. I don't want that. Mm.
But you can't defend.
No,
that.
I don't need to defend it. I can throw myself around. Yeah, yeah. That's all I'm going to do is I'm going to throw. I'm not suing anybody. I'm not going after. I'm going to throw myself around. I'm going to sit. I'm going to fucking yell at you on this podcast. That's it. That's all I got. I'm not going to get lawyers. I'm going to say.
Well, you're right. That is all we've got. Yeah, that is all anybody's
just,
got.
You know, these motherfuckers are. It's a slippery slope because it's going to get worse. And it's going to get more and more hard to distinguish between AI photos and real photos. And AI, that's another thing that's, you know, it's just like you're going to be putting photographers out of business. Mark Adams, he's with me. He hates it because he hates it because it really does, you know, take away a lot of people's work.
Video now, seeing people saying
music.
Things and they haven't
you
said.
You can put a you fucking, know, you can put yeah, a song together. Oh, we've been on here too long. Well, you could chat GPT up a song. That's bullshit. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I want it to sound like Green Day. Fuck that.
Who wants that?
Jeez. Damn right. That's for sure.
With that, shall we call
Let's
it a day?
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, remember, if you've got questions, particularly audio questions, we love them. Send them to us at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Go to your DMs and you see a little audio signal there and you can send it through to us. Don't go sending us fucking AI voices and stuff just to wind us up.
Voices I'll take. You
know? AI voices.
Voices I'll take.
We're gonna have Trump messages.
Voices
coming.
I'll take.
You know, we don't need shit like that.
Voices
lives.
For the podcast, voices I'll take.
Homer Simpson.
What about all those artists on Cameo who are making a living from their voices?
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, you're right. Craig, you fucked up with Jay-Z and all those guys. Yeah, you got a point there. Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking about like robot voice.
Real people, though.
I was thinking about robot voice. I wasn't thinking about like...
Yeah. But listen, if anybody does want to do a question in a voice, not using AI, but if you can do a good impression... I'm sure you'll get gold listener status if it's good. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.